You're listening to Triple Radio on the Fat Gatsby Network.
Well, then I will start recording. In that instance.
Larry Newman.
All right. Hey.
Hey, are you recording now?
I'm recording now.
Yeah. All right. Hey, everybody. Hey. Welcome to what? Hey. Welcome to Triple Radio.
Hello, fellows.
For March 2025, we delivered. Last episode, we promised we'd record an episode before the end of March, and we did it, by
Heck
Jove.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Tim. That's Dave. That's Weiss.
Wow.
Yeah. David settled over there.
My chair. It's a fucking saga with this chair. It's fine. I've got a rack. I've got this like audio rack down here that gets in the way of the base of my chair. So just sitting up and down in my chair sometimes.
What did I do? So there used to be a, like an entertainment center basically on the other side of this desk, which was like the auxiliary flat screen and like video game console setup for, you know, Richard to play games upstairs. But
the auxiliary unit.
Auxiliary unit.
Battle Bridge.
Now that is downstairs again with our old couch, and now there's just a small desk over there. But doing that meant I could move my desk out about another, you know, 4 inches, which gave me like lots of room where before I was very squished in here. But now it's great.
All right. So this is right now the room that you are in is the little room across from Richard's room. Yeah.
No. Oh, wow. You haven't been in my house. That's right. You were in my house once since I moved everything. No. This is where my bedroom used to be.
Okay. That's what I thought. So when you say downstairs, you mean the basement.
I mean the basement.
Yeah, so the auxiliary. Yeah. Okay. I know. Okay.
I also did that with the upstairs downstairs. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I have to go downstairs to get there, but it used to be that his bedroom was upstairs with kind of the office up there. But then we moved everything around. Richard is still bitter about it. Cause he got it.
So Richard's bedroom is now in the smaller room.
Yes.
And
yes.
You and Lauren are in the larger room that was Richard's.
Yes.
Oh yeah. I bet he'd be salty about that.
He's still salty, but we did that in like 2020, I want to say maybe it was early 2021 there.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, we did that. I mean, part of the impetus was, I don't know, there was multiple impeti. Mm-hmm. I don't.
Yeah.
I think it was a matter of me getting my computer out of the basement. That was like one impetus. Mm-hmm.
You could have been bored, like given the time that you mentioned it.
Yeah.
I'm not shocked that that's when you rearranged your house.
Yeah.
Lots of people rearrange their houses during that time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like, if I was not having to be in the basement to go on my computer and like having our bedroom not right by the living room, just moving the sleeping areas like straight upstairs is that's where they go. We didn't do it when we moved in the house because we had a big one piece box spring that wouldn't fit up the stairs. But now we have like a foundation that can be easily disassembled and reassembled. So. Mm. Then now we can have the bed upstairs and we can be upstairs. So Richard doesn't like his little room. He reminds me he misses the big room. And I'm like, that's tough nuggies, little man. But I have lots of space for my chair and I'm not running into an audio rack. So that's good.
Yeah. Oh, it's nice for you. All of this is to say that not having nice your chair me. Bump into a goddamn audio rack is a real blessing. So,
yeah, but it also worked out because like now Lauren's work from home desk is over there and like Richard has a little desk and this, it's just better.
Even Richard has a desk in there.
Yeah. It's just covered in like Pokemon cards and shit.
Rad.
But he has his, in the future, that's where his little computer desk will go when he needs to do that stuff.
Still covered in Pokemon cards is not work.
Yeah.
He is doing work.
Absolutely not. It's just sitting there. The real work is the cards that are sitting on my dining room table.
Oh, I see. That's so this desk is just a staging area
for
where the real work gets done.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's he's currently the pendulum is on Yu-Gi-Oh. So,
oh, I see.
And I tell him, and I'm just like, I refuse to get involved with it because the cards are smaller and so is the text. And there's like a paragraph on every one of those fuckers.
Physically,
and I'm just like, I can't.
It's bullshit. They're physically smaller than standard size playing cards.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. That must be a pain in the ass.
Crammed on there, and
like
I'm just
for cards, the for card sleeves and binders and stuff, that must be hugely inconvenient.
Yes. I don't know what they're thinking. I cannot believe that Yu-Gi-Oh is not one printing on standard size cards and two like doing something to simplify the text on them.
That's pretty dumb.
Right, it's relevant in the first place.
Yeah, Pokemon cards are pretty simple. Magic cards, I can kind of follow. There's just a lot of rules. And then it's like, yeah, you get into those. And like, we were trying to learn the Dragon Ball card game. And I'm just like, I don't know what the fuck makes me feel like an old man. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these card games are many, many years deep with many layers of complexity layered onto them. So it's like, yeah, it's tough. But
people love their lore.
Yeah. Speaking of lore, Lorcana was actually really easy to learn. So I did that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you've not played a few runs of
Lorcana. Yeah, Lorcana's actually a pretty good card game in my opinion.
Yeah, nice and streamlined.
Yeah. Yeah, what else is going on? Anything?
Oh boy.
I'm sad I didn't get to see more movies this month.
And I only saw the two, but I guess it's for once it's the same two as Dave.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'll just leave for a while. Unfortunately, that my plan.
Did you miss both of them?
I did. Yeah. No, the things I saw were Paddington in Peru and in catching up, and I saw Nosferatu. Uh-huh. So,
I'm excited to hear, especially your thoughts on Paddington. Did you see Paddington 1 or 2?
I've seen Paddington 2. I don't remember seeing Paddington 1.
I've seen both.
Paddington 1's also great.
They're both fantastic. 2 is a masterpiece.
Yeah. I wouldn't call Paddington in Peru a masterpiece, but it was delightful.
That's great.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Good enough.
Richard really enjoyed it. Yeah. It's just, nice. You know, I don't know. It's nice to have movies that aren't just like full of bullshit, you know, like we're going to follow this bear.
You need a letterbox, my friends. You need to just,
you just like, yeah, we're just going to follow this bear on with some like madcap antics and capers in Peru in a foreign land. And that's all you need. Like, yeah.
Like it's switching out the director was like the biggest like question mark, like if it was going to feel in line without Paul King.
Yeah.
Of the other two. I'm sure it'll be missed, but still.
Yeah, cool. It's still. I could definitely. Like I said, it doesn't hit like Paddington 2 did.
Yeah.
Okay. But.
Yeah.
Do we have a celebrity villain on the order of Hugh Grant in Paddington, Peru?
Well, it's Antonio Banderas kind of fills that slot. So he's having fun.
Okay.
There's some good nonsense with him, for sure.
He loves going big. I have no problem with big campy Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So he's having a grand old time. But to lead into your things, like, yeah, we made a boo-boo going to see Mickey 17 because this was like on Lauren's birthday. Mm. So we were in and she had like an appointment in the morning, and then it's like I have a meeting in the afternoon still that I had to make it to. So it's like we had to, you know, limited times that we could manage to see the movie.
Yeah.
And we had never, I'm like, Weiss, have you ever seen a Regal RPX movie?
Is that the 4D?
No, it's not 4DX. It's just Regal RPX, which is Regal Premium Experience. So it's it's listed as just like that it had, well, one, it describes the recliners as butt kicker recliners, all caps. And just like larger screen and like surround sound. So I'm like, okay, maybe it's like
are there somewhere between regular recliners? Is that the idea?
boy, it sure fucking felt like it.
Okay.
It was, we didn't even make it through the previews because like there was so much bass, like it was literally shaking my 270-pound ass off of my recliner. Like it was so uncomfortable. And like we walked out and it felt like we'd just gotten off a roller coaster.
Oh geez.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were just like kind of scuttled on the movie thing and went and walked around the zoo, which was pleasant and very nice.
Yeah, that sounds like a good choice, honestly. If
yeah, you're, yeah. Oh my God. Well, also note we have not been to the zoo since we had Richard. So
really,
this was our first. Yes,
I thought well, he was a big zoo guy.
We have been there with Richard, but me and my wife have not been there without him since he was. You know, it was like we took him there constantly.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Had the whole thing. But like, it was like, oh, we haven't just been here together like in over a decade. This is pleasant. And there's, you know, middle of the day, it's still cold out. There's no like school trips there. Yeah, just yeah. like it's really just parents with their children that are like two or three or four that are not school age.
That's a good crowd.
And just a few of those. And that's it. You know, got to see the new tiger, you know.
Well, that's how yeah. So let me make sure I'm understanding what you're describing here. You went to go see the movie.
Yep. Got in the theater.
But by the end of the previews, you were like, fuck this.
We were two previews in. We made it to like halfway through The Woman in the Yard.
And did you go and like ask for a refund?
Yep. Yep. And no problem. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. So excellent. No harm, no foul.
Good, good, good.
Also, though, the Regal previews are literally a half hour. So
yeah,
good exactly. on you. I have timed it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, it
drives Richard up a freaking wall.
It should. He's correct. Wants,
yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, especially, like, because, like, most people here go to Draft House. Mm-hmm. So, like, going from a Draft House that usually has, you know, I mean, it's a little different now, but it's still, like, maybe three or four trailers yep. that they chose.
Yeah, three's fine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then you go to a Regal, it's like, well, I guess I don't have to be on time anymore because it's actually worse when I am now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because it's like movie start time. And then there's like 10 to 15 minutes of just like Regal stuff before they even get to the previews.
Yeah. It's 15 and 15. Yep.
Yeah. It used to be, you know, it's movie time. You get on the snack roller coaster. And,
yes, exactly.
And then you get into the previews and it's like, okay, like 15 minutes, you're good. But now, yeah, it's like.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah, I went to Regal for both of these movies 2 days in a row, back to back. While I'm glad that I saw them in a timely manner so that we can talk about them today on the podcast, I do have a little regret that I did not follow the Instagram account of our local indie theater, the Little Theater, more closely. Because not only did the Little Theater host a Zoom talkback with Eric Boza, after the Day the Earth blew up, which is awesome. They are having the author of the novel Mickey 7, on which Mickey 17 is based. They're literally hosting him in person because he's from Webster, New York. He's from
there.
Yeah.
No shit.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Yeah, I might just go see it a second time to check him out.
That's cool. For sure. Like follow the Little, follow North Park Theater does some great shit. And Eastman House, of course.
Yeah.
They're all like from 5,000 miles away, they will be accounts that I'll peep. They're very fun to watch. Yeah, Eric Boza has been cool. Like, I don't know if that's Boza.
I don't know either.
Yeah. But he's been showing up. Like, I was so happy that I didn't realize he played both of the leads.
Yeah.
But he's showed up in a lot of podcasts, and if you happen to watch George Lucas talk show stuff, which has blown up recently, if you want to go down a YouTube hole, those are very, very fun. Mm. They do live tellings of the prequels, for one thing, but also there's much more to go on, but he has been a presence. So seeing him kind of get a spotlight now and be kind of the voice of the Looney Tunes.
Yeah,
it's been very cool.
He talked to me on Twitter one time.
Ooh.
I felt
special. Well, anyway, go on. Talk about the great movies I didn't see.
My kids were impressed that he did both voices because he can do them so distinct, like as distinctly as any of Mel Blanc's, you know, voices are from each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Going back to, it's always fun pulling out, oh yeah, Regina Hall did both voices on the Boondocks. Like, if we're going into like the duel, yeah. But do you want to start with Mickey or you want to start with Looney?
I saw Mickey first. So
okay, yeah, I was thinking that too.
There.
Cool.
Yeah. I would say it is, I enjoyed it, but I would consider it a less essential.
Yep. That is correct. Yeah. For me, agreed. It's a B+ with something I really enjoyed in every scene, that with plot lines that were just like completely unnecessary at times, where there was just like certain things that could have just like gone, but I was also always kind of entertained. And
the movie was 2 hours 17 minutes too, correct? So it's not like there wasn't room to cut stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and the pacing wasn't like, I never like felt it being like slow or anything. There was just like, why is that person there? Or why did they, like, you get to the end and you're like, well, they didn't really pay that off. But also, that was fun. You know, like, there's always something. It's really interesting.
It is really interesting. I guess. I would describe it. Now, I have not, like, seen all of Bong Joon-ho's oeuvre. I believe what I have seen of his is limited to Parasite and Snowpiercer. And okay. So those two movies being my frame of context, this feels like a remix of ideas previously explored in those movies. Like it is an interesting dinner made of leftovers, and that doesn't make it a bad dinner, but it also makes it just somewhat inessential. I never felt a drag. If anything, I felt like it was very enjoyable. It's perhaps his most accessible movie, like, to Western audiences.
Yeah,
it's a fun popcorn.
This and Snowpiercer. Yeah, this Snowpiercer. I guess the only thing that holds the host back is subtitles for people. Like, if it was in English, I would say that's the easiest accessible. But
This movie is fun and funny. Like, I was laughing out loud at multiple points, and it still has, like, for a fun, funny popcorn action genre movie, it, you know, gets about as deep. It touches on the themes of class and socioeconomic conflict. And
I was gonna say, like, it's not afraid to be like, you know, like, Ruffalo is Trump as Musk, you know, like,
I mean, yeah, that was so on the nose. And I love Mark Ruffalo. But I felt that was, it was just, I mean, I love Mark Ruffalo. I adore him in everything I see him in, but he's no Tilda Swinton.
Yes.
Like.
Yes. And that is exactly. And there's nothing subtle about Tilda Swinton's in Snowpiercer, but I think that one worked better than, and same with Toni Collette. And I loved watching Ruffalo and Collette, but neither of them hit as hard as, and we're clearly going for whatever, Tilda Swinton and Alison Pill, like, all the big characters in Snowpiercer were kind of like doing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I felt like it was, if Parasite didn't happen, this would make so much sense after Snowpiercer and Okja. Okja was the Netflix one. He made.
Yeah, which, I was meant to catch that because that's more kid friendly, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if I finished it. I think that's my least favorite, but I still like all his stuff that I've seen. But also, yeah, I mean, he always hits similar themes, but it's definitely, I don't know. Parasite was definitely a step. It was just like, you can't beat that for a while, like and. Like, I haven't seen Memoirs of Murder, like the early one that people love of his. Mm-hmm. But, Parasite's going to have to stand on its own for a bit.
Well, sure. But, yeah. But, and it's hard to compare, in a way, Parasite to something like this, which is a genre film. Mm-hmm. And, like, the production design on this is gorgeous. Like, the sets, the set dressing, the really, like, lived in, grungy, like, this is not the best spaceship. kind of there are corners being cut, like it all really creates a really effective and cohesive world, just like Snowpiercer did. I guess the other thing I'd say is, of course, our boy Pats is killing it. Just destroys it. Just he's riveting to watch.
Yeah, he's wonderful. No, love Pats. Love Pats doing a straight up Stimpy voice, as he said. I feel like it almost would work better episodically if it was like if it was a half hour cartoon of just like, this is the adventures of the Mickeys this week, or is building into like something like that. Cause I don't think like we know where it's going for so long. And like, again, there's always something I like watching. It just kind of doesn't build in a way. And again, like as funny as that one scene with that other female lead is, why she is there in the first place. Like, and like her last scene is like, oh yeah, I'm in the movie. Bye. Sort
of thing. Yeah.
There were just a couple moments like that I'm just sort of like, and I don't know, this one was on the editing block for so long. I'm so curious, like, what was changed, what wasn't changed, like, were some of these decisions that came like later, or is this just kind of like fighting to keep certain things? I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it's doing well. It's a weird, you know, original sci-fi movie, with a great ensemble cast. So
yeah. Bong Joon-ho's preoccupation with smell is another through line that I see in all of his movies, you know, that sort of grounding oneself to nature and the primal functions of the human body. But I think it also stands in contrast to those other films, and just by way of the fact that our protagonist here, Mickey, what is it I want to say about him? He's not, I mean, he's along for the ride.
Yes.
You know, it is, it's almost, you know, sort of, the George Lucas retelling Kurosawa by making the peasants the folk, you know, it's a big story told through the eyes of the little characters.
This is similarly, tell me if this is too much, but like, I remember you've seen Being There, correct?
No, I've never before. Seen Being There.
That was what I kind of wanted this to be. It's Forrest Gump is kind of the same thing. That it's, you know, like you're, you know, kind of incompetent lead is stumbling into things that are happening around them, that sort of thing. Like Being There has a bit more to say, but like, I honestly feel like, yeah, if they would have like pushed him to the background and let the other, like, make him important to the other characters and then focused on them, maybe.
Then again, inherent to the plot, we do get him interacting with a version of himself who is more willing to take direct action to change his circumstances. Yeah. So,
which I loved. And that was, that was really interesting. Yeah. And it was almost kind of my Rogue One issue in a way, where it's just sort of like, oh, you're confronting the apathy, the problem of apathy.
Yeah.
Where it's just sort of like, oh, okay, we've externalized it in a way.
Yeah. So it all works. It's all great. In fact, talking about it now, it's makes me have a better recollection of it than I previously did.
Right.
I hope it's doing well. Is it doing well at the box office?
Right now is a really hard time to gauge in general, because like good is like so shitty, but I know, well, if we transition, Looney Tunes is doing much better than I believe they thought.
Oh really?
Which is great. Yeah, especially given, you know,
so it's doing just even worse.
What's that?
No, I just I'm laughing at that disaster, like them lowering the bar and it managing to get under it.
I know. Well, I feel so bad for her because she's great.
Yes.
Who? What did I miss?
Rachel Zegler, is that?
Snow White.
Is that her name?
Yes. Snow White. It was.
Oh, I didn't see that. That's not doing well at the box office.
No, I was talking about the box office thing. Yeah. And well, yeah, people
It looks awful.
Yeah. Well, so, some people are blaming it like, oh, it's, you know, they cast her and she's Colombian. She's not Snow White.
Right.
And it's just like that movie, you could put anybody in that role. That movie looks like fucking shit. Like, it looks so fucking bad.
And even if that movie looked great, also, Snow White is more a symbol than a character. Like, you could put anybody there, race or gender, whatever. I feel like you would have an easier time with that than, like, a lot of other Disney movies.
Yeah.
People are going to be people, no matter what. But, but yeah, boy, that first trailer came out, and I was laughing very hard. I'm so sorry.
Yeah. When we were at the theater, one of Violet's friends from school was there at the same time, and she was there to see Snow White. And the movies ended at the same time. We both got out and we were like, how was Snow White? And they were all, and this little girl and her mom were like, we loved it. It was great. It just kept going on and on and on, which I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's praise. And so they're like, Violet, what did you think of your movie? And she was like, well, it was weird. I would be happy to talk about The Day the Earth Blew Up, but Tim, I don't want you to have to sit too long because I also saw Nosferatu, Tim. Mm-hmm. So if you want to hop in,
either or. I mean, we were right there talking about The Day the Earth Blew Up.
All right, well let's keep it going. Let's keep it going. All right, the very next day, I took both my kids back to see The Day the Earth Blew Up, and
okay, nice.
Yeah. So
yeah. All right. Well, I really liked it. I don't know how you feel. I was so happy with Farmer Jim. I was so happy.
Oh my God. I love Farmer Jim.
Like it's not perfect, but it was doing some things I did not expect. And they kept it to Pork. They kept it to Porky and Daffy. They didn't have like other characters. They didn't have no Bugs cameos, no Marvin the Martian, which is what I was like expecting.
Oh right.
And
of course
no you know celebrity stuff, and like somebody Demi Ojibwe, I always butcher his last name. It's like, oh, it's a Muppet movie. Like it's the framing of a Muppet movie, like the way that it progresses, which is how I kind of felt about it in a way. I think there was too much air between gags, but that's my main complaint.
Right.
Like, I wish...
Yeah, so I guess I am trying to reconcile what I am seeing on social media, which is people saying, like, oh my God, it was so funny. Everyone in the theater was laughing constantly. I was gasping for breath. It was so funny. It was not that funny.
I thought it was funny. not gasping for breath. And like, I think my thing is, this has come up a couple times. And I can't think of what the other thing is. I will later. But like, it's sort of halfway between like a feature and a short. And I feel like if it was shorter, it would have made the jokes come at you twice as fast, and that's the pacing it should have been.
Well, that's the reputation of Warner versus Disney, right? Is that Disney is better at the long form stuff, and Warner succeeds more at the short form stuff. And so, immediately after, you know, what me and my kids, our general consensus was that it was really fun. Like the first third of the movie, say, was really fun. Because it was weird. I mean, there's Farmer Jim.
Yes.
Like it was deliberately weird. It had like the energy of Warner's shorts of like the best, just the pacing is really good. But then they get into the plot and everything just kind of slows to a crawl because they're trying to start to tell a story. And like Petunia Pig she is the character she needs to be to serve the plot, but she's not really a distinct character. And I am fond of actor Peter McNichol, but he's also not really bringing anything unique or special to our alien villain either. Like he's kind of just doing a real generic broad idea of a mustache twisting villain.
With that scream. What? that scream that Peter McNichol
Yeah.
I'm agreeing with you though.
Yeah. So that was the, I think we all agreed that it kind of dragged that way, but Weiss, you, mm-hmm. you specifically said yes. you were curious about how my kids felt about it.
Yes.
Violet, who for our audience is 8. I think it really just kind of washed over her. Like, I just don't mm-hmm. think it's her thing. It's her style. They both watch and like Animaniacs, which is okay. their primary, yeah. you know, exposure to Warner Brothers cartoons. But I did,
yep.
right before we started, I pulled my 13-year-old, Julia, into the booth and recorded 5 minutes of her thoughts about the film. And if it's okay with you guys, I'll play them right now. I think our live audience can hear mm-hmm. it. So here it comes.
Yeah. Well, we gave permission before.
Okay, so I'm here with my oldest daughter, Julia. And
what's up?
We went to see The Day the Earth Blew Up on Friday. And Jules, you was it you or your sister who said, I already kind of don't remember
it? That was me.
That was you.
It was memorable at the time with all the stuff that, I don't know, happened in it. But, like, mm-hmm. over time and overall, I think it just wasn't that memorable, especially like at the end. I feel like if the movie was a continuation of how the beginning was, I think it would be a lot memorable. I'm sorry, that made no sense whatsoever.
No, it's okay. Let me ask you this though. We've never gone out of our way to show you and your sister Looney Tunes no. cartoons. So you've never like sat down and watched a Bugs Bunny cartoon, yeah?
I don't think so, no.
I feel like a couple of times we have sat you guys down and shown you like Roadrunner cartoons.
Yes, I distinctly remember Roadrunner.
And I think we watched Roadrunner because those were the guy who animated How the Grinch Stole Christmas, Chuck Jones.
What?
I don't remember that being the reason. Well, it was my reason. I don't think I told you guys that, but like...
Secret agenda.
Yeah. Well, there have been like a few like animation directors at Warner Brothers over the years who sort of have put their creative stamp on the Warner Brothers style and characters over the years. So like Chuck Jones era Daffy Duck and Porky Pig are very different characters from like Bob Clampett era Daffy Duck and Porky Pig, because that was a different artist, different writers, different style, different time period, you know, a different decade. So you have no context whatsoever for like how Daffy Duck and Porky Pig are meant to behave, right?
Yeah.
Like you don't know their personalities?
Well, I feel like all I knew about Porky Pig was that he stutters, which seems like an awful thing to be the only thing you know about someone.
Yeah.
But Daffy Duck, I feel like I remember watching a Daffy Duck cartoon. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was like a segment on Animaniacs. I don't remember, but I feel like I remember Daffy Duck, and I remember him being like a cabana boy, and like
cabana boy, okay, yeah.
And like it was like someone was at a pool, and like he was like the worst at like being helpful. That's all I remember. But okay, I feel like it was Daffy Duck.
And way back then, he and Porky were often paired together in cartoons. So, okay. You know, I think this personality was good because it's like an odd couple situation. Porky's right. the responsible one and Daffy's the wacky one. But your other only major context for like the Warner Brothers style is Animaniacs, right?
Yes. Love me some Animaniacs.
So how do you feel like this compares to something like Animaniacs?
So I feel like the Animaniacs, at least like the reboot, mm-hmm. I've watched both, you know, the old one and the reboot, but I feel like the reboot, everything is modern except for the Warner Brothers and their Warner sister Dot. But with this, I feel like the whole thing was modern. I don't know. I feel like Daffy Duck and Porky Pig fit into their world better than like the characters in Animaniacs fit into their world.
Because this movie, the world is designed around them, right? Like
yes,
the conceit of the Animaniacs. The conceit of Animaniacs is that they are fish out of water, right? Is that
yeah.
they're not supposed to be here.
Yeah, no, I guess that's right.
Yeah. But like Porky and Daffy, like this is the world that they live in. This is the world they exist in.
Yeah, and I feel like that just didn't make for as good a storyline. I feel like Looney Tunes, like I guess I just feel like they're supposed to be like that, you know?
Let me ask you this. Was the movie funny?
At the beginning, it was really funny. Like, probably the first whole half. But the second half, it just wasn't that funny in the second half because they weren't really being weird. Like, it wasn't as weird in the second half. And I feel like that's why it, like, kind of lost me in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like they were trying to make actual jokes and not just being absolutely insanely weird.
Like, you could feel them trying to be funny. It didn't come naturally.
It just wasn't natural.
So try hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would watching this movie make you want to watch another Warner Brothers animated film based on the strength of this movie? Would you be like, oh, I'd be up for seeing another one of these?
I would want to see how they would compare, but this movie alone, I don't think really is motivating me to watch anything else if it's going to be like this. I don't think so.
Julia, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. So for some reason, little Bruno Mars is the next thing on my music playlist. But,
I mean, one thing, well, I guess a couple of things off of that, but like, no, I did want to mention, well, because there are so many different types of Daffy Duck, and I was, you know, I would say I like Daffy a bit as a kid. Like, this is the type of Daffy that I would have chosen.
Oh yeah,
like,
I think
the
this
completely
is
screwball. Yeah, because like, I was so worried about, especially once Petunia was in there. Like, a go-to for Daffy is always like the jealousy envy thing, yeah. And they didn't do that. Like, I feel like that's the conflict I did not want.
Yeah, yeah, so. Agreed. Yeah, no, excellent stylistic choice with this particular style of Daffy. Yeah, I thought characterization-wise, it fit really well. I liked the world, and I guess it's part of the one of the greatest strengths, I think, of Warner Brothers shorts is that they work so elegantly that you don't really see the seams. Like, the gags come so fast and so fluidly, and they the gags make logical sense, and they are classic gags usually.
Yeah.
And then there's like the you know, deliberately cued musical scoring, that undercurrent. Like, you don't notice it's there because it fits so perfectly. So all of those things elevate the Warner Brothers experience.
I will hop on the music thing, because I did watch, like, there was a fun video on the composer trying to figure out how to do, because they have a lot, you know, they have a full orchestra that they're, like, cueing, you know, for this, and how do you make that work for 90 minutes?
Yeah.
Versus a short, and trying to find, like, that balance of, like, well, we're going to build here, we're going to make it feel like a short, but now we're giving this a little more time. Like, it's a very interesting challenge.
Yeah, yeah. So I almost hate to disparage it again, because this is like, this so much effort went into this beautiful, beautiful film. You know, but
none of it marketing, but yes.
Yeah. yeah, no, I just wish it could have sustained that manic energy, you know, throughout, but that's not what Warner Brothers typically does well. And they didn't really nail that here either. So I guess I'm not surprised. But
no, I'd agree with the strongest stuff. The stuff I think about is in the first, either first half ? It does get a little blurry with like the entertainer scene and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, that was great. It is everything right up until the plot takes over, really, you know, until the gum starts out, because they're doing wacky things like here's the Looney Tunes logo. And at that point, and then the aspect ratio changes. And at that point I was like, is this going to be just a series of shorts? Are they going to break this down into a series of shorts? And I was almost a little disappointed when that didn't happen, when they only did that.
Yeah. Like, no, I agree. I think I'm just, I'm happy that we even got it. I think that carried me like so far, you know, just like it was 2D. Like if there were more gags, it would have cost more. And like Warner is not, it's a nightmare right now.
Yeah, no, I know. I am absolutely 100% grateful that it got released at all, which is why I insisted on dragging my kids to the theater so that we could buy three tickets. In the hope that, you know, hopefully this sends a message that, Wile E. Coyote versus Acme, the title of the film. Mm-hmm. We'll get
Coyote versus Acme.
Yep. Hopefully, Ketchup, the distributor, will be allowed to buy the rights to distribute that, and we'll finally see that.
Yeah, no, there was a Deadline article. There, Ketchup is trying, so hopefully, fingers crossed, they take that bid.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I always think of, I mean, when I say airy, like I think of Harvey Birdman, which was a 15-minute show, but they wrote those scripts to be a half-hour show. And that's why that show had like those fast gags. Mm. And I just wish that they had written, you know, 180 pages of gags.
Well, I told my daughter, my aspiring film director / actress daughter, you know, on the way, I said, I want you to be on the lookout for gags. I want you to be on the lookout for how the jokes are structured. I want you to look for rules of three. I want you to look at when they set up an expectation and when they subvert that expectation, because that is the great thing about, you know, the other thing that everyone says about the Warner shorts is that is what taught me comedy, you know, is that is what taught me the structure and, you know, beat by beat structure of how comedy functions. And so I wanted her to pay attention for that. And but like there was also not a lot of that in this movie, you know, because the funniest parts were the stuff that was kind of weirdly subversive. Farmer Jim.
No, and that's like you've mentioned Animaniacs, and I came out thinking this was closer to Tiny Toons, which Animaniacs is a better show.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But you know, you needed Tiny Toons to get to Animaniacs, and Tiny Toons is like a slower show.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
That was trying to have like a little bit more heart and a little like less gags.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
it's yeah, a very 90s movie. No matter what.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. I got the other takeaway that I had was that ultimately Hundreds of Beavers felt more like a series of Warner an endless series of Warner Brothers shorts than this movie was.
Now, yes, but also you're kind of getting into Tex Avery in that too. You know what I mean? Like it's just kind of like that era too.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, I mean, Tex Avery is probably my favorite, and that's the fastest you're gonna go.
Yeah. Like, and it's a wordless film, you know, it's the style in a wordless film, it's got to be, you've got to get the visual gags constant, you know, that's because that's the whole movie. So yeah, I guess that's,
and there's so much to learn from that, from Hundreds of Beavers just in general too. So good.
I think that's all we have to say about that over here. From the Ottavino family.
Yeah. Very good.
At least.
Yeah.
But Tim, I also watched Nosferatu and fucking loved it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
You get to see it theatrically at this point? No, probably not.
No, I watched it 30 minutes at a time while running on an elliptical machine.
Oh, that's a way to watch it.
On a 12-inch tablet screen.
Oh, geez.
Oh, wow. Man. Watch it again on a bigger screen if you can.
Yeah, I was about to say, my favorite part of the movie was like how it looked and like the cinematography.
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, like, you know, it is I'm 12 inches from that tablet while running.
I get it. I know. Just like you have an excuse to watch it again if you
want. Absolutely. Like I'm trying real hard to get Jan to watch it because...
Okay.
Oh my God, it's so met because it's not a horror. So first of all, I was not, this is the first of this director's, this is the first of Eggers' movies that I've seen. I still have not seen The Lighthouse.
Interesting.
No, I know. I still have not seen The Lighthouse. I really finally need to go back and watch The Lighthouse. But yeah, this is the first of his movies that I've seen. And I am just absolutely blown away by the filmmaking here. Like there is a, the sequence, oh my God, the sequence where,
it's a carriage shot.
Pretty Boy Teeth Mouth.
Oh, okay.
My God. What's his name? Pretty Boy Teeth Mouth.
Yeah.
You know.
I know what you mean.
Lex Luthor. Lex Luthor to be.
Oh, yeah.
Nicholas Holt.
The Beast. Thank you. Yeah. When Nicholas Holt first...
I do not know what his teeth look like. I mean, Fury Road is what my brain
is. Yeah, that's what... Yeah, Fury Road, I think of First Class, and Lex Luthor.
Oh, yeah, First Class. That's
right. Yeah.
Nicholas Holt, when he first arrives at the castle...
Yes.
...and first encounters... Orlok, like that is the most. I would have to watch it again to see just how long that shot lasts. Because in my memory, it feels like a really endless tracking shot. But it's such a beautiful example of capturing like not just dream logic, but like nightmare dream logic specifically, where the thing that you are afraid of is there. It's present with you. It's just out of frame. You just can't really see it, but the camera's not cutting. It's there. Your focus is always there. Like the camera's on Nicholas Holt, and it's his reaction. It's his panic that sells this idea that like everything is deeply wrong. And even though we, the audience, can't see exactly why, we see the glimpses of his hands and we see him in profile, and it's, we get these very oblique glances at the terrifying thing,
which is honoring the original a lot in that sense.
Oh really?
Too. Oh yeah.
I've never sat down and watched the original. It's
so good. I mean, like, visually, because it's German expressionism, right? So it's like it's all just like shadows and reactions, and it really is the biggest fucking weirdo shows up in a conservative town, right? So everyone's like, and it's like so obviously an analogy for like the plague at the time and stuff like that. So it's just like this terrible thing is just in your face, and it's a bunch of people being uncomfortable and like shots of that. And
but lots like of horror movies obscure what's scary, right? I mean, that's not uncommon for a horror movie.
Oh, it's done well.
That's the thing. So it's that the camera holds. It's that it doesn't cut away from. It just doesn't allow him fully into the frame. That we have no escape from the camera's gaze. Like, it's just, it is such powerful cinematography. What a film.
It is. Yeah, no, I mean, like... I think of shots. I think of that carriage shot, like, which is still just like such a money shot, just like the carriage on the road and like the slow push in and like all that shit. And, you know, and even like right before, like he's going to the castle, like I was, the scene that I was so worried about that did exactly what I wanted, which was like the Romani village where they're like, okay, we're not going to shy away from it. We're going to go, you know, head deep into like the thing that you were worried about when we go to Transylvania and like playing it the right way. Yeah. And that guy that's fiddling and glaring at him the entire time is so funny.
Oh God.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to rewatch. Well, it's just, it's funny, you know, going from Mickey 17 to Nosferatu, I'm just sort of like, you're going to watch The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
It's just one two combinations.
Like, I'm chomping at the bit now to go back and watch The Lighthouse finally.
I mean, The Witch is great. It's a very patient movie as well.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of his Viking movie.
Norseman,
which was very good. It just wasn't as good as
the Northman.
The other three. Yeah, it was North.
It was Northman. Yeah. I mean, you know,
Northman. Don't know how you mix those up. I mean, Yeah, honestly, I would say watch Primal instead of The Northman.
Oh, personally. Okay.
But
this is also my only Bill Skarsgård. I have not seen the modern It. So
no. This is much better in my opinion.
Sure. Well, yeah, that's
like what like as well like a lot of people like the It Part One. Like It Part Two is universally pretty hated, I think, at this point. But like the first of those movies, and I think you would agree, the problem with that Pennywise design is that he's trying to be spooky, and I just find it funny the entire movie. Like I'm just laughing at Pennywise trying to be scary versus Tim Curry that was terrifying being a regular ass clown who was also Tim Curry.
Yeah. He was also Tim Curry.
But like this felt like a melding of things in like, I don't know, it was very unique.
I mean, because I think the popular imagination of Count Orlok is this impish, smooth, hairless goblin, right? Whereas Skarsgård's Orlok, like with the mush, you know, they I think really played up that sort of Romani, and that the like he's a Cossack, you know, the big black mustache. I mean, he's hairy. He's got the deep gravelly voice. Oh my god, that voice! Like, and then you see what Bill Skarsgård looks like in real life, and you're like, this very pretty man.
Yeah.
Wow.
That also looked like Squidward. He's also shaped like Squidward. Be real. and the height of it, like I'm sure I said before, like one of my favorite things of the movie was it just like, it's the first time that it felt gross that Dracula slept in a coffin or a vampire slept in a coffin. Like, where I was just like, oh, right, he's in the ground and there's icky things. That should be kind of gross.
I was just thinking, I was like, well, the movie is trying to make him not sexy and apparently failing.
There was a good article from Angelica Jade Bastin just on like sensuality versus sex. Cause like, this movie does not have, you know, it's not sexy because all the sex is just like growth power stuff.
Yeah.
But also I get it.
It's like, you know, he's like the way he like tears up that one dude's daughters, just like ripping him apart.
Oh, yeah.
Just like,
right.
I love that. I don't remember if it was that scene where it's like the shadow of his hand is like casting over the city. Yeah. Like that was really, you know.
Yeah.
Good which shit. Which was a great way to heighten the original too, because there was like that was just the window in the original, which is still like a striking shot, but this is just taking that idea and going, okay, let's see where we can go with this.
Yeah.
Which I think is a great idea for retellings. And also, it's such an old story. This isn't one that I was like, oh no, they shouldn't. Like, it's a challenge to make it feel fresh, but I thought it had a good reason to do so of just, you know, we've had a lot of like romantic vampires and they're like, no, let's make it, you know, let's bring it back to like not Anne Rice vampire.
Well, this really makes me want to also go back and watch Francis Ford Coppola's Dracula, which I don't know if I've ever actually seen the whole way through.
Ooh.
But again, it was so pervasive in popular in popular culture at the time, in popular imagination. But also,
and Nosferatu.
And Nosferatu, well, yeah. But, you know, Coppola split the difference between an ugly, decrepit monster and a handsome, virile, swarthy foreign gentleman. You know, he gave us both versions. And so the romantic vampire is still there, but so is the beast. And so
it's true.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's hard not to think it's romantic with Johnny Depp in 90.
Keanu Reeves, right?
That was the Keanu role, right?
Yeah.
Gary Oldman is what I was thinking.
Yeah, Gary Oldman. Yes.
Still sex.
Yeah. Willem Dafoe, frankly, I've seen him do so much stoicism in his acting lately that it's a pleasant reminder that Willem Dafoe is one of our very best manic, crazy, obsessive characters too. He's so wonderful in this.
Yeah. No, it's, he's insanely watchable and goes for it in everything. Yeah. I'm so happy when he shows up.
Yeah. Yeah. Another reason I want to watch The Lighthouse. It's really just all the forces are conspiring to get me to finally watch that movie.
And that is one that you can appreciate on a smaller screen. It's the 4:3. It's a,
I forgot that it's 4:3. Oh, perfect. Great.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, God, I love that movie.
That's that.
Yeah. Good choice. Mm. Well, did we want to do work backwards and go into like, I only have a couple TV things, and then go into games, or do we want to go into
games? Oh, I got TV, baby. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. Where do I have TV? Weiss, what do you got?
All right. Well, quickly, I don't know if I mentioned I finished Lower Decks, because I know I said I was going through that.
Yeah.
I liked that show more and more as it went on. Really loved the ending, and Mike McMahon. The Separate, I suppose, however you say his last name, is encouraging people to buy the physical media so that hopefully they can make more episodes someday. So the nice thing about that is it possibly could. There were a couple characters, of course, that I was sad didn't show up, but they also found ways to
also buy the physical media, because you never know when the owner is just going to decide to throw it out for a tax refund or whatever.
And quickly mention that they threw out all of Looney Tunes while a movie was in the theater. The fucking craziest movie. But no, Lower Decks really like pulled it off for me, which I would not have expected at all from the first season. For me.
I'm slowly can't wait for Strange New Worlds. Season 2 of
Nice. And
Strange New Worlds, yeah, coming up. Can't wait for that. Also, season 3.
Can't wait. Yeah. And they're already filming season 4, so so they have put their chips into the show.
Oh, which that's is great.
A relief. Yeah. for Star Trek stuff. Now, the major show I have was really, really good and comes with a caveat. So did either of you hear of or watch Win or Lose by chance yet?
No.
So the Pixar show that's on Disney.
Oh, Richard's been watching this. I haven't been
seen
paying
a lot of promos for this.
Yeah.
So I think it's the best Pixar I've seen in a long time, since at least Turning Red.
Okay.
And also, shame on them for cutting the trans storyline for the character that is clearly trans. Mm. Like, it's one of those things where, like, it's a goddamn shame because the show's so good, it could have been great to elevate that. Yeah. And there's no reason they should have. And also, the show's really, really good. Like, it's really good about just being expressive and just kind of like what we were talking about. It's just like, oh, this is a way to represent what this character's thinking of. It has a really satisfying, kind of what you would want them to do, which is a small story told with a bunch of characters, and those characters get interweaving episodes with different points of view, and then the finale pulls them all together.
Well, fuck.
So unfortunately, it is worth watching.
I'm disappointed to hear this because I've been real sour on Pixar lately.
It's definitely, like, you know, I hope this team goes on to do more stuff and Disney stops being stupid about social issues.
But Pixar needs a leash to do, you know, interesting things and not just like, oh, you want us to make another sequel or another.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think, and it's annoying because I want it to be in the movies, but the second that you're doing a Pixar movie, now you have the pressure of making that money back. And if you've seen the slate of Pixar movies coming, it is sad. Like, they put up
it's been sad for
all
a while,
sequels.
Honestly.
It's been sad for a while. I mean, like, I liked Luca. I liked whatever. There was another one in there. I love Turning Red.
Yeah. Turning Red. Luca and Turning Red for me are the two last great Pixar films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Lightyear was not great. Elemental was the most boring of things. Inside Out 2 was, you know, not nearly as good as
Inside Out 1. Oh, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I did see that. Yep.
I forgot whether
Soul.
I forget where Soul falls.
I like Soul.
In.
Soul yeah. was a little few before. Years ago.
Yeah. That was a pandemic movie.
Yep. That was 2020. Yeah. Onward, you know, me and my child, some of the two people that saw that Onward in theaters.
Yeah. Yep.
Which he really liked. But, you know, it was okay. It was
Right.
You know, just, yeah, Pixar established such heights that it's like, we're still chasing that high. And
I know, like, this might be like a last burst. I'm not sure, but hopefully, like, at least, I don't know, with it being on TV, it has less pressure and it's like a new challenge. It's just like, how can we do this episodically? Make a game, Pixar. Make a book. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's great. Well, that is literally the only thing I have heard anyone say about this show so far. So,
like I watched it because a lot of like the animators I follow, specifically like people that were on like Gravity Falls, are like, no, you need to. Oh, they're doing some really interesting stuff.
Right. Oh, that's very cool.
So, okay, that's the thing. Like on the animations, like because it's a story about a baseball team. Mm-hmm. But like the animation goes like off. So,
all right. I'll have to like give it mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Worth a peep anyways. What did, Dave, you had some TV, it sounds like.
I guess I'll lead off with, Severance just concluded its second season run. I can easily say, well, I guess I can safely say at this point that, for a highly anticipated season two for a wildly critically acclaimed show. I guess I'm vaguely aware of some grumblings about this season. I thought it was spectacular. I thought that it was in no way.
I've mostly heard great.
I've seen a couple people who have done like, yeah, wow, this show's shit now, isn't it?
Wow, I haven't seen it that far.
I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen any of Severance at all. So it's like, I'm just.
Yeah, same. I will. I know. So many shows.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. I think I can probably safely place it as one of the best television shows. It's kind of on another. It's one of those shows that is on another level, which doesn't really, you know, do justice. And you can say that about a lot of things. I know that that's a meaningless statement, but like,
no,
it is
but
the upper echelon of intelligent and at the same time, wildly entertaining TV dramas in terms of prestige dramas. That is also kind of genre fiction in a way. And like, and this finale was like stuck the landing in a way that a lot of season finales don't really, in the sense that they, you know, have to tease the continuation of a plot. This finale did so many things so well. It was riveting and thrilling to watch the whole way through, concluded so satisfyingly, like one of those endings where obviously I can't wait until season three, which thankfully has already been officially announced, but also like if it had ended right there, it was a good ending.
That's the best you could say about a season finale.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I love about the show is that's exactly what I hear about, like from anybody that talks about Severance. Mm-hmm. And then when I see a picture, it's somebody bored standing against a wall. And everyone's like, this show is brilliant. And I'm like, I gotta trust you. I love, because obviously they're trying to not give away, you know, things.
Well, yeah,
of course.
Which is why I think the best elevator pitch I've ever heard for it is Backrooms, the show.
Ah,
because of, well, you know, while yes, at first glance it is people standing against a bare white wall, it is everything that is enticing about that idea of a creepypasta and this endless hallway, but what could be behind around there? What danger is lurking? And it is also a show about, I guess not about class, but about like labor and working and like asks questions of that I don't believe have ever been asked before. And we're pondering existential questions about self that I have never pondered before. That's why it is such a unique story and piece of media. It is absolutely unmissable. It is vital. It is required television viewing.
It's a great review.
Briefly, White Lotus is almost done. It's also fantastic. Mike White does a wonderful job, as always, telling stories about class and culture clash and you know the interplay between the people that service the wealthy at a expensive hotels, and Walton Goggins is just a chance to enjoy some Walton Goggins. Yeah, it's Walton Goggins.
I will say, like, I'm someone that did not, when the first season came out, and I watched the pilot, and there were so many rich people on a beach with bright lights, like shows and movies. I love Glass Onion, and that was the one I liked. And all the other ones were just, like, a little too much for me. This season specifically, from what I've heard, like, I might just skip to this season, if not just for Parker Posey.
Oh, honestly. God. She's so great.
It's been great seeing the children have found Parker Posey, and people have been having fun going, oh.
Quote, yeah,
oh, she's an archive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she is doing what she does best. But then there's one more show that I want to talk about, and I'm going to try real hard to talk around it. It's a Hulu exclusive. It's a show called Paradise, which...
Oh, sure. Yeah. People went nuts on that one.
I had never heard of it.
Yeah.
Like a neighbor recommended it to us, and we're like, okay, sure, whatever. And so
okay, neighbor.
I went in kind of blind, like it was weeks ago when they told us the premise. And by the time we sat down to watch it, I was like, what is this show again? And I had completely forgotten the premise.
So, I have too.
So every moment was a surprise to me. And I think that's the best way to experience it, because it is a hell of a pilot. It's the kind of pilot where you're like, you immediately kind of want to see more. And it's the things that it has going for it are, it is created and written by, the guy who did, Dan Fogelman. So this is a Dan Fogelman joint who wrote Cars and Tangled, for Disney, and then went on to great success creating the show This Is Us. And the hook of This Is Us is that it's a flashback-based show. We see a family in the present day who is broken apart by grieving. And then through flashbacks, we see, you know, through the death of their father, you know, how they connect and how they... So this show, Paradise, is also told through flashbacks. So it's got that same hook to it. So that's a compelling enough thing. But then there's this whole other aspect to it where it is also a genre fiction show. And again, because I think it's best to go in blind. I don't want to say it is a fantasy or a sci-fi or a supernatural or whatever kind of twist it is. But suffice it to say, for me, it felt like a nostalgic throwback to the glut of shows in the mid-2000s in the wake of Lost, where there were a ton of shows with like just a weird little twist. Like, it's a cop procedural, but also it takes place, he wakes up and it's the 1970s for some reason. Or it's a detective show, but he lives in two different parallel realities, and what happens in one reality, you know, it's like, so everything is sort of colored by it. It's grounded in reality, but everything is colored by this extra genre fiction kind of thing. And so when that twist happens, if you don't know it's coming, it fucking hits. Nice. Yeah. So it was just, and it stars my personal boyfriend, Sterling K. Brown, who I love and would leave my wife for in a heartbeat, and and James Marsden,
no one's leaving a wife for, but he's cute. He's cute.
Yeah, super cute. Playing a he's playing a very like John F. Kennedy style president, and Sterling K. Brown is the Secret Service agent who protects him.
Who you cast Sterling K.
So I get that's all I want to say about the show right now. But it's got those very two very interesting hooks. And so, like, Lost was also a flashback show. I'm having a Lost moment because Julia, my oldest, is rewatching, watching for her for the first time. She's marathoning Lost right now.
Well, a lot of people comparing Severance to.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Severance is a better show. Severance is a more thoughtful, more well-planned out, more carefully thought out show.
I mean, I'm sure, but yeah, I could never get into Lost. I gave it like 5 episodes.
That's fair. But yeah.
Yeah.
This show Paradise is it is not Severance. Severance is an incredibly high bar. But it is the premise of this show is extraordinarily compelling, and I encourage you anyone to it's on Hulu. It's a Hulu exclusive. If you have Hulu, just check it out, cuz yeah, it's great. That's my TV. That's TV for
me. Nice. All right. That's TV for me.
Yeah.
Ooh. Did you watch anything or go to games?
I'm kind of in the middle of anything that I'm watching right now. It's tough because I don't get a lot of time to watch stuff. It was kind of a miracle that like the mood hit like for both me and Lauren that was like, we're going to watch a movie tonight. We can watch Nosferatu. Yeah. Just getting alignment on vibes to watch something. I mean, I'm now, you know, it used to be she'd watch The Pit and I'm kind of like playing a game and half paying attention. I'm just kind of to the point where I'm like, well, time to not play the game anymore. Which used to be how I'd absorb TV back in living rooms with three TVs. It's like, oh, someone's watching something and I'm playing a game. And then eventually I stop playing the game and then I watch the show. You know, it is like...
It is insane to think of just sort of like, oh, the attention economy right now, and then just flash to the pictures of our living room that was, you know, the four TVs, two or three of them playing the same thing, maybe.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. And
it was
I mean, like, it was cool because that's how we'd kind of absorb different things and get into different stuff. And
It was also, I mean, like, I don't know. We chose the movies that would go with that too. Like the movies and shows, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or at least if I was putting on something that I was going to narrow in on, you guys weren't going to be playing a game I wanted to watch. It wouldn't be Snake Eater or whatever.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I remember it was just like, oh, that's how I ended up getting into Battlestar. Cause like, I think Rory started watching it and I was not that interested. And then I was like much more invested in it. Like, and I was like, okay, I can't be playing whatever the hell I'm playing. I actually care about the show now, but it's like,
that's a good mark. Good mark of quality.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, once it gets the attention. So yeah, that's good. I'm like trying to get through. Yeah. I was trying to get through Loki season 2 because it's only 6 episodes.
Did I finish it?
I watched one episode when it started. And I'm just like, I mean, it's 3 more episodes at this point for me to finish it. So I'll finish it. It's more like Andor's coming out in the next month. So I'm going to be all over that. Fucking Andor's coming back.
There was a trailer today, I believe.
Yes, there was, which I liked more than the first trailer for Andor season 2 was kind of ridiculous because it was leaning very hard, very heavily into the critical acclaim of the first season. And it was just like, come on, guys. Like, I'm not watching. I'm not thinking of this as like, oh, my prestige television show is coming back. It's just like, but yeah, the second one still mentioned it, but I'm like, yeah, okay. Fuck yeah, this show.
I've not watched any of the trailers. Not that I'm purposely avoiding them, but also I don't know.
Not really a need to.
I don't need the marketing to tell me what to be excited for. This is for me. Andor is a known quantity. Like I know what I'm getting into, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm just hoping it hits like the first season did. You know, because it could be a mega bummer if it doesn't. But here's hoping. I've just been watching a lot of Elden Ring bingo. It worked. Well, it's just the right thing that I know I can follow the commentary and kind of know what's going on and watch the important parts and whatever. Mm-hmm. But thanks to, I feel like I talked about this last. Did I talk about that last time? I think I might have mentioned it. But like, so basically it's a dueling speed run, sort of. So it's like they have a bingo board. Apparently this originated with Ocarina of Time. And that like they give you goals. So I'll frame this around Ocarina of Time because you guys know how to the things in that game. So it's like you have a bingo board and it could be like, okay, you need to kill X amount of Skulltulas. You need to collect, you know, two different pieces of like the three suits and the three bracelets and like the three swords or whatever. You need to kill this boss. You know, you need to get the silver scale from the Zoras, like different things that you do in Ocarina of Time. But, you know, because the thing is with Ocarina of Time at this point is the game is broken as fuck. And like all the speedrunners know how to do everything. It's basically an open world game to them, which is why it works with Elden Ring really well. But it's like, you know, you can get out. They know how to get out of the first village without going through the Deku tree. They know how to get the sword without doing the shit you need to get the sword. I think the first sword they get is the Master Sword. And it's because they glitch. You can glitch through the wall to get into the Temple of Time and pull the Master Sword out and be adult Link. But then you can't go back to being Child Link until you actually defeat Phantom Ganon. So you have to be able to. It's just like, but you need the hook shot. So you have to like glitch your way to the hook shot. It's much more difficult for me to find or follow, but you know, Elden Ring is a game that I know. So when you map that premise onto a game that I know that is open world and it's like, okay, you're trying to make a bingo on this board by accomplishing these goals in the open world where it's like defeat this boss, collect this much of this thing, you know, go here, do that. And it's like lockout bingo. So only one person get the square. So if two people are going for it at the same time, like sometimes they snipe each other by like seconds and like, you know, you see the other person be like, oh crap. But then, so they can't see each other's game. So like there's like a real interesting like back and forth kind of mind game mechanic to it. And if nobody can get a bingo, then it goes to like who gets the most squares, who's the first to 13. And I don't know. I think about Elden Ring like every goddamn day still, pretty much. That's my fun thing that I just keep putting on at work is putting on bingo brawlers and watching people race in Elden Ring. That's what his channel's called. Bingo Brawlers with tons. He just did like an Ocarina of Time showcase this past weekend. But that's much harder for me to watch because I just don't understand what they're doing.
Yeah,
because it's 20 years of Ocarina of Time. Yeah, almost 30 years of Ocarina of Time glitches.
Yeah.
Coming to play. And like, you know, the one guy's trying to explain it. It's like, oh, yeah, we're doing this like item switch glitch to like put this into our inventory, but if you do that then it makes this item inaccessible forever and it could turn this into this, and if you do this you can't get bombs back, and it's just like,
oh my god. Yeah,
well, but it's all glitches. It's very arbitrary, but like I'm imagining more of a Breath of the Wild scenario where, you know,
that would probably be
everything is accessible to the player naturally from the start.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure someone's done some kind of thing. Cause like with Elden Ring, I think you could just do it with regular Elden Ring. Like the way they did it in like the one kind of series I was watching, they had like a weapon randomizer in there. So like the weapons like weren't in the same places. So it's like you basically get a drop for like a great sword in this. You were guaranteed a drop for a great sword. So you knew you'd get one. You wouldn't know if it was a good one.
Oh.
And then they did like the more recent season they did is all based around the Shadow of the Erdtree DLC. And it's cool because they modded it so that like there's a shop right there at the beginning of the DLC with like a guy who carries like a bunch of stuff from the base game, and they give the players like a certain amount of money so they can customize their character right off the bat. Okay. And then they actually have they put in a fog wall that goes down at the appointed time when the players can actually go out into the world. So like there's nice. Some mod stuff around it. That's really cool.
Yeah. Interesting.
And mods are crazy now with like randomizers and stuff like that.
It's too much. The world of mods. Yeah. Everybody brings up like buying a game and just like having their own mods and just like too much choice.
Yeah. It's like there was like a randomizer Ocarina of Time speedrun on GDQ and I just like I had such a hard time following it. Like I can follow the Link to the Past like randomizers, and I think I would be interested in playing a Link to the Past randomizer because I know that game and the map and like where things should be.
Yeah,
so I think that would be interesting, and maybe like some of the Souls games I know what kind of well enough, but it's just like it's wild. I don't know, but all the time I'm just thinking about like I could just be playing one game. I could probably just live out the rest of my life playing the games in my house. Should I just be playing the games in my house? Do I need to keep buying games? What's going on? Am I just questioning everything?
Yeah.
Anyways, what games did I play were not in my house? Unfortunately, I'm kind of in the middle of a lot of stuff.
That's okay.
Which is always weird because it's like I have a little bit to talk about, but I'll maybe have a more complete thought next month. Yeah. Or maybe I will have just stopped playing it entirely. So who knows?
I mean, how often do I finish a game?
Yeah. I am more and more comfortable with just not finishing games and being happy with the time I got out of them. Speaking of which, Avowed might be entering that that space right now. I'm still okay with it. So, you know, Avowed, it came in pretty hot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they got that game like this is the Elder Scrolls, like the Skyrim Elder Scrolls, like first person RPG from Obsidian that dropped on Game Pass towards the end of February. Kind of a throwback to that, but you know, set in their own world. And yeah, I still they have it kind of sectioned off into, I'm guessing, three or four like kind of mini biomes that you can jump between, so it's not one big giant map. But like I got to the third one like sometime last week and I'm just kind of like, maybe I'm done, maybe I'm good, maybe I've seen enough, maybe I've done enough. I had like really good momentum through the first zone, pretty good momentum through the second zone, got to the third one, I'm just like, man, I don't know if I'm feeling it still. It's like one of those things where it's like I've gotten really comfortable with kind of the build I chose for my character at this point, where I have a, you know, my main weapon is like a two-handed rifle. And then my other weapon set is a pistol with a spell book. Cause I found, you know, the spells are very fun and I like having those on hand, but it's like, you know, I kind of got the rhythm of my combat down, and despite having like a few new abilities, like nothing too much has changed. I also had the good fortune of like being what felt like very overpowered for like about 10, 15 hours of the game. Like I found a very good gun like very early on in the second area, like, and I was like, oh holy shit, this is just, and which was very rewarding, I might add. Just
I was gonna say, I have no problem being overpowered.
It felt so good.
I usually don't, but I can understand how that can lead to a feeling of when you are accidentally overpowered so early in a game like that, and then your build out doesn't, you don't have a reason to change your build out because like, well, this thing that I have pretty much wipes the floor with everything, so I don't feel a sense of progression or growth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
True. Yeah. Well, it's not, now the game is, you know, the enemies are definitely harder, but I'm having, now I'm struggling because I want to like upgrade the weapons that I have, and like the materials are, I just don't have easy access to those materials, or just, I think the gains aren't quite as much, but it's just like, you know, it's still good. But I was like kind of playing the game. I'm like, am I done with this? I'm like, you know what? I should probably just do some mainline story quests for a bit here.
See if that hooks you. And if it doesn't, then.
Yeah. Which was more interesting. You know, as soon as I did that, I was like, okay, I'm already feeling better. Instead of just kind of like trying to run every goddamn errand in the world, it's like, oh, wait, no, let's mainline for a bit and then see if I want to take for a break from that. But, you know, whatever. If I stopped playing it, it's like, well, you know, it was on Game Pass. And I still played it for like 20, 30 hours. So, you know, but whatever. I mean, still like it's definitely a good one of those. But yeah, like South of Midnight is the next kind of big game that's coming out.
Oh, yeah.
And that's in like a few weeks. And I definitely want to check that out. So that could also just kind of bump it out.
That's the one that takes place in sort of like a gothic Louisiana, right? Like,
yes. Yeah. It's got a cool look to it.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah, magical, realistic,
yeah,
gothic, mm-hmm, yeah, South. Yeah. So that looks like it might have some cool stuff going
on. The racists are mad about it.
Yes.
Of course.
Oh, man. I did finish Echoes of Wisdom.
Hmm. Oh, nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, like I think I mentioned, like, yeah, I got the water block in that game.
You did. And I totally forgot that you said better. That. I totally forgot to go back to that game because.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, once I got the water block, because like you get the water block and like, you know, you get through the water block associated dungeon and then it's like, okay, you have three things to do in disparate parts of the map. And then it feels very like Breath of the Wild where it's like, okay, I can just go anywhere and do anything and kind of tackle water things how I want them to water block your way around. And I definitely had a Breath of the Wild-esque moment of empowerment when it's like, you know, in those old, the top down Zelda games, it's like, oh, there's just like a bunch of line of trees here and I have to find my way around the tree. It's like, no, I fucking don't. I just water block up on top of the trees and walk over top of them. That felt awesome.
Fuck those trees.
Fuck those trees. They're not getting in my way. And then they're like, boom, I'm like right into the next area. I'm not like walking all the way around to try to find the path in or some hidden cave. It's just like, no, I just went right over.
That happened to me organically somewhere, I think, over the back of the desert, like the northmost end of the desert. I think I got up onto the trees. I'm like, oh, I can walk all around these trees. And,
yep. Yeah. You could just do that.
You just do that.
You could do that with the beds. You can do that with the water block. Eventually you get clouds. So you can just have them float in the air. They don't need to be attached to anything. So yeah, it's really cool for like that big section of the game. And then like it was kind of not quite as good right at the very end where you don't have your sword power anymore. You have to fight bosses without the sword power. And it's kind of like, well, I'm just going to summon a bunch of guys and they're going to kind of take care of it. Yeah. And yeah, so it's like the last boss is just me running around mashing the button to send out Octoroks to shoot rocks at it, which was effective, and just kind of like, okay, all right. But like I said, the juicy center of that game is quite good and was very rewarding with unfortunately, so like one of the, so, you know, Dempe, the gravekeeper's in the game, but I didn't. So it's like, I ran into him on my way to like the last major quest. And like, he said something like, oh, come by my house at some point. And I was like, okay, dude, I'll get there eventually. But he has like a whole side quest where like, he'll make like little mash freak show automatons for you that you can summon. Ooh. But it was like the end of the game, so I didn't really dig into it.
So you had
so it's it's not like he was really out of the way. It just so happened that it was one of the last areas I wandered through was where he was to activate that quest. He's like just north of like Hyrule Castle, so if like once you get to that point, just pop up there and try to run into him so you get that quest going and get that going. That'd be some advice for that. But yeah, I think that game is worth sticking with. It's pretty cool. It got overshadowed by a lot of stuff last year and other Zelda games, but it's still got some neat stuff going on. Let's see. Classic RPG Remake Duel. I had to try to figure out whether I was going to play Suikoden or Dragon Quest III. Right.
So you played Suikoden?
I played a bit of Suikoden, and then I was like, then I bounced back to Dragon Quest.
It'll be a quicker game than two RPGs.
Yeah. Suikoden doesn't have like a save anywhere feature, which seems weird. Okay. Like you need to like go save in an int. Like that seems like really egregious for a remake to not just be able to save anywhere.
Interesting.
Right. Yeah. Cause I feel, I mean, I would have to check. I could be bullshitting. But when I was playing it on the PS3 version, I thought that there was an option to save.
Anyway, yeah, no, so I don't know. I had to sit there and like figure out how to save my game in SuiCode, and it's like,
hey,
is there like save point? There is save points, but like then it's like you have to go up to the innkeeper and ask to save your game, and I'm just like, oh man. Apparently there's some kind of autosave, right. but it pops up like really quickly, and I'm just like, ah.
Okay.
In Dragon Quest III, you do it like it does a quick save, like an old like Game Boy Advance or DS game. But I'm just like, whatever, I can work around that. I just have to remember.
Yeah.
Did I mention that my launch Switch died? I think I did
you
last
did.
Time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, you did. Yeah. Yep.
That's become it's. I didn't play much on my Switch last year, but now there's this huge log jam where it's like I want to play Dragon Quest III. Lauren just got into Dragon Quest III. Richard's like hot into like he's always you know. He played the Switch all the time, and now he doesn't have that Switch to play. So we're all like tripping over each other, and I'm just like, man, they can't get that. And next week, April 2nd, the Switch 2 announcement. Come on.
Oh, is it?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, that's the formal showcase is next week, Tuesday.
Good to know.
Yeah, so that's what I'm waiting for. It's just like,
yeah,
it's like if they
price
say it's not
date.
Yeah, it's like it needs to be coming out soon. If it's not coming out till like the back half of the year, then I might have to like get like a Switch Lite in the house or something like that just to sate. But yeah, if it's going to be in like May or June, then we can probably hold out a little longer to get that thing.
Check shopgoodwill.com. That's where I found my Switch Lite for $100.
Oh, nice.
When I've checked from time to time, they can pretty reliably be had for around $100.
Yeah. I do have a lot of credit at my local game store that I could probably get a Switch Lite from them without, you know, taking money out of my pocket if I really needed. If I need to, if break glass in case of emergency, I'll get that. Like I actually took them a bunch of kind of random old stuff I had last month. Yeah, just like clearing out space. I'm just like, yep, I finally let go of my Saturn.
Wow.
I haven't played still, it. Last time I
know,
played it.
I got to do that too. What do I have? I think I have Knights. I think that's literally the only Saturn game I have.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you remember a time, I think it was like one of those game nights I had maybe shortly before you went to Texas. And like we played some Night Warriors, Darkstalkers.
Oh, yeah.
Warriors
of
the Night. That was like the last time I really like busted out the Saturn for anything. Yeah. So. It was quite a long time ago.
Like it's one of the things I want to play most if I get a Steam Deck, but like I can't afford to buy Saturn games. I haven't been able to afford it most of the time that it's existed.
Yeah. Yeah. I was lucky. I only paid $100 for Panzer Dragoon Saga.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah, it's like I can play some of those, you know, emulate those now. So I'd, realistically, if I'm going to play, I don't have the nostalgic attachment to a Saturn to keep it around. I'm just like, just don't need it around. Got rid of my PS1 with the screen. What am I doing? I'm not going to hook that up with the screen and play it anymore. Why would I? I have a Steam Deck that can play all of those games. And any of my physical PS1 games I can play on PS2 or PS3, it's don't need it.
Yeah,
they took my Sega CD with no cords. They're just like, if there's something wrong with it, we can fix it. I'm like, okay, dog, you know. And just some like,
man, I need a better game shop. mine's too picky.
Oh, they're great. Yeah, they're great. Yeah, actually, yeah, they gave me. Yeah, I got cash out of them that day too, so that was nice. Ooh. So they're great. Anyways, yeah, heart of the game for anyone who's passing through Buffalo. Great store. Now it's just kind of like the quick hits. Actually, okay, there's some other stuff there. So I'm slowly replaying Baldur's Gate 3 on my Steam Deck, just kind of here and there, because that game's awesome, and I just kind of was feeling the need. Some of my other friends have been playing it. Lauren was replaying it. I wanted to get back into that. I started Gravity Circuit.
Oh yeah.
Oh sure. Wow.
I think it's the Humble Monthly this month. which had like a bunch of games that were have kind of been sitting on my wish list, like Pacific Drive, Gravity Circuit, Tales of K'nZara Zhao, which was, unfortunately was an Origin game. Cavern of Dreams was another one. That's like a 3D, you know, a throwback 3D platformer. And there was like a couple other things. I was just like, oh, these are actually just games I've been looking for. Like, yeah, you're take my money.
Perfect.
Yeah, like one of the more well-rounded Humble Bundles I've gotten in like quite some time.
Oh, good.
Yeah, Gravity Circuit, I've only played, you know, this is a sort of Mega Man-ish game with more of a melee focus for your character. Like you're not shooting, you're punching. You can grab enemies that you've beat up and then throw them around. So it's got like a different set of mechanics to it, but it still has like, okay, you're going to go through 8 stages and kill some bosses and take some powers. My impression right now is, man, these stages are really fucking long. Like, holy shit. But I've only played through one of them because I'm just like, well, I got to like, if I'm going to play through the whole stage, I'm going to need like, my first one took me like almost 40 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And like, yeah, I'm dying, but it's just like, God, it just kept going.
The very first stage, that first like intro stage?
The first one I feel like was kind of long, but then like the first actual stage was very long.
Okay.
Yeah, and also the characters are like very chatty. Yeah. I'm just like pounding through dialogue. I'm like, just shut the fuck up. Sorry, I hate to be like that, but like,
no, I fucking hate it too. There's no
just get your point across.
Get me. This is an action platformer. I don't.
This
need
is an action platformer.
Convey what you need to convey to me through gameplay. Like, I liked Gravity Circuit. I only played about as much as you because I got it free from Amazon Prime, I think, before I canceled my Prime subscription. I'm a good boy.
Never had one. I mooch off my mom.
There you go. That's the way to do it. I felt like the core gameplay was satisfying, although there was this... I kept feeling like this is so Mega Man-y. I sure wish I could shoot something, I guess. I don't think the game mechanic, it all felt good, but I don't think it all quite clicked with me because there's some grappling you can do also, right? Yeah.
Little bit. Yeah. Like you can grab things and throw them. And I think some of like your, because there's also like some special moves that are tied to a meter. That you can assign. I think some of those might be grabs.
Yeah.
There's I just
a big
bought like
move set.
Yeah. There's you have a lot of abilities. And so like that's what I was willfully trying not to just get frustrated and bounce off of it quickly. I'm like, I need to like try to meet this game on its own terms with what it's trying to do and not just be a pissed off curmudgeon that it's not Mega Man. Because I do think it has cool things going on, but it's totally. Like, is it all going to gel together? And are all the stages going to be this long? Because it's just a lot. I felt that way about fucking Mighty Number 9, too. That game also sucked. But it did have, like, kind of an interesting mechanic with what they were doing with the dash. It's just like the I'll say this is better.
The
than
level Mighty design number. Was not
yes.
good.
This That's is better than Mighty Number 9 because these levels are long, but what they're doing is interesting. There could just maybe like you could throw out a few of these. You could have left some stuff on the cutting room floor. Like you didn't need all of these ideas in here. Whereas Mighty Number 9 was like, where were the ideas? That game. So we'll see. That one's kind of on notice.
Yeah.
I was also getting bogged down because you might have noticed I'm playing a lot of RPGs because as I do. So I popped in Stellar Blade. Want to talk about something that makes the racists happy. if you don't like woke, you will love Stellar Blade and its sexy jiggly android main character Eve.
I thought a lot about that name.
yeah they thought guess what the male companion's name is. Yep, you got it. So this is like, I guess I was hoping it was going to be a bit more Bayonetta because I just wanted something more like actiony. It's still kind of like, you know, this is a shiny AAA game with really nice graphics. Like all the combat feels, you know, snappy and good. Like it's not like big hordes of enemies that I've been fighting. It's been a lot of kind of like smaller, like one-on-one with like lots of parrying and dodging, like a little bit more deliberate than I expected.
I've always heard it described as a character action game like Bayonetta or Devil May Cry.
It's definitely striking me more as like the wish.com near Automata because I mean, like, my God, your girl, she's an android girl who's part of this fighting force for like a war that doesn't really seem like it might make sense anymore. And I'm going around a destroyed city ruin with like near-ish music playing. And like, there's a little robot guy that follows me around and I'm still pretty early in the game, but I'm just like, man, wow, which is fine. Like, you know, this is one of the, it's a Korean developer, which is kind of like an up and coming AAA scene with like Korea and like some Chinese games getting out more. So they're, you know, they're copying what they like. And it's cool. Like, you know, it has been satisfying for like, I am playing a very pretty action game on the TV and doing that kind of stuff. But I've only played like a couple hours so far, so we'll see.
Yeah.
But again, very early. I just started playing it yesterday. We used to pick up any Playdate games.
Hey, that was a nice transition. Cause that was the one game I got.
Yeah. Let's go.
All right. So, and I tried to describe this game before and failed, but, you might've heard of, Spilled Mushrooms at this point.
Okay. I have, that's one of the ones I think that's, I'm pretty sure Spilled. Yeah. I got Spilled Mushrooms. I haven't played it yet.
Yep.
I got
it. That's the one I've been playing. So. Okay. It's good. It's nice. Like it is a card puzzle game. So it is, the conceit is some mushrooms have been spilled in some areas and you need to send your animal cards to go get them. You have 7 days in which to figure this out. So each animal has different rules of how many mushrooms and how many days it can go, and you're mixing and matching. And there's different rules involved in that. But they're very playful in how, like, the rules work. For instance, if you have a wolf, per se, which will only do, like, one mushroom a day, but it will eat the animal above it and take its powers. Mm-hmm. So if you want to set that up, you can put something weak above it, it will devour that, and then, boom, there you go, sort of thing. So, they've got daily puzzles.
Not good at all.
Nope, you can't. Yeah, unfortunately.
No, the light's over there.
Beautiful screen in person.
Yeah, it's so crispy.
Yeah. No, I've been really, really into it. Because you get the daily puzzles, and then it just kind of like, you can just kind of randomize what you have. I know that there's a way that you can kind of like designate what cards you want to come up. I haven't fucked with that, but... I'm so glad that they added the wish list to Playdate.
That has changed things for me.
Yep.
It's wild now, how much the whole thing has come along from, like, you know, when I first got it and it was just like the season games that was like very limited. But now it's like they have, you know, a shop that's accessible from the Playdate where you can just make purchases, and it's super satisfying to buy it on there because you turn the crank to buy.
That's true.
It feels really good. You can just browse the store on the catalog on the Playdate, download the games. It's just like very smooth, like it is on any other console. It's just like it's the Playdate, and there's just these little tiny games that don't show up anywhere else.
No, I wish I was into shooters, because I feel like there's, I mean, like the especially vertical, you know, space shooters. Yeah. Like, I will listen to the soundtracks, but...
I did a splurge. I picked up a few things. I did grab Direct Drive. I haven't played it yet. Nice. I got Spilled Mushrooms. I haven't played it yet. The thing I've been playing the most is Word Trip.
I think I caught that somewhere. Let me
This is a four-letter word game where they give you a word on top and there's a word on the bottom, and you are trying to spell out words. You can grab one letter from the bottom word and then you use three letters from the top word, and you are trying to eventually by stealing the letters from the bottom word, spell out the bottom word. And then the bottom word that you spelled out becomes the top word. And then you get, then, you know, you do the whole thing again. And like the whole, like, kind of setup of it is that, like, yeah, it's a road trip. So if you run out of gas trying to think of words, then you lose. And it has a daily thing. But yeah, that one's been a really easy pick up and play, like a round or two,
yeah,
and
like
put
that.
It back down. That's Trackmania.
Ooh.
Which is Trackmania, but you know, a Trackmania like, but on the Playdate with like some really, it just feels good. Like, I mean, man, some of the racing games that they make on here, just like, this is just looks so good and
feel yeah, really I good love the that. Direction. That looks great.
Yeah, like the drifting feels really good on this, mm-hmm. and it's just, you know, it's not like a huge. You're racing against one other car. It's more about like, you know, trying to hit times. And then I think it has like a course creator in there too, just like Trackmania, so you can do that. Mm-hmm. I bought Paper Pilot for $1, which is, yeah, you might recognize as the mini game from WarioWare.
Yeah, exactly.
it's 100% what it is. You turn your Playdate sideways so that you have a vertical screen, and then you're just guiding your paper plane around walls, and that's mm-hmm. it. And it was $1. And Sparrow Solitaire, which is just a Mahjong game.
Oh, yeah.
On there. It's just a good one. You know, just have that on there is a cool thing. And yeah, I haven't played the other two yet. But yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Playdate.
Yeah. I was pretty close to, I mean, you know, I only chose one on this one. But like, I was looking at Skew for a while. Have you seen that's supposed to be good? It's kind of a mechanical device that you're propelling with the crank.
Oh, no, like, I've not.
Yeah, it looks really good. It's nice. A spinoff of The Last Worker. Is that what it's called? Yes, The Last Worker is a game, and this is that's on like PC.
Mm.
And this is a small spinoff of that. And so you're like this goofy looking device with the like third person behind you as you're cranking forward.
Oh yeah, look at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
God damn. Yeah.
Right?
Looks cool. Shit. That looks really cool.
I was very close on that one.
Oh man, that's gonna have to go on my wish list. Boom.
That's right
there, done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm so glad that that experiment paid off for them.
Oh god, the Playdates are currently on back order, so
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Well, I saw that they were also selling refurbs. Was that I believe something either refurbs or used. It had to be refurbs because I saw like there was a cheaper one. I don't know how
that's
many.
Interesting news. I'd be down for a refurb.
Yeah, right. I'm glad that they are still selling steadily. That's really cool, and that like the community. I mean, there's more and more games all the time on there, so like it's got its own popping little scene on there.
Yeah, no, I did the same thing I always do on a Playdate sale is hop over to Reddit and see like what people are actually like talking about.
Nice,
which is great. It's very fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of got to browse through, look at some staff picks and see what all's on there. I mean, it's like it's funny because it used to be the catalog notification would come off like, I don't know, like once every couple weeks. And now it's like every other freaking day is just like, oh, there's more games. OK.
Yeah, I can't even like I was keeping up for a long time. Yeah. Now, not so much.
No.
They are still planning a season 2, right?
I took a survey recently and I think it's still a possibility. I wonder if they would build it out of like kind of like some of the existing games. Like if you paid for a season 2, I mean, I imagine it would have to be all new stuff because like,
right. It has to be a surprise.
Yeah. You want the surprise, but you couldn't just grab like, oh, you know, Root Beer and,
right,
Mars After Midnight, and like there's your season. I mean, that would be great for people who haven't bought those games, but like,
yeah,
not so much, you know. Yeah, you need that surprise moment of everybody. Yeah, probably a tough
thing. It would be neat if they threw like a freebie in every once in a while where it's just like, surprise, here's root beer. I feel like especially.
There was like something. I feel like there was like a free one last year, like one of the fishing games, like real steel. It is called Real Steel. I feel, or Recommendation Dog. That was a freebie, I think.
Oh yeah, that was great. I like the one.
I also love how like Playdate games are just fucking weird and stupid with their premises. Just like, oh, you're a dog who finds who runs a temp agency. Okay, sure. Yep. Why not? Yep. Fantastic. Just a weird little world. Dave, you play anything?
I played a little thing. So I guess desk toys that I acquired either used for cheap or deeply on sale is I finally got one of these Neo Geo mini cabs. Super adorable. But then I got the Sega Astro Mini.
Yeah, I got one of those suckers.
Right. Oh man, so
pretty.
Yeah, they're both really cool. The Neo Geo cab is much smaller, and so ultimately, it's just a little too small to be enjoyable to control. And the screen on it's kind of garbage. It must be a really low refresh LCD because it's kind of ghosty.
Video out?
Yes. Yeah. There's video out. There's USB ports for controllers on both of these.
Yeah.
But this one, the screen is really nice, and it's just large enough that it actually, you can reasonably play around a Virtua Fighter on this. Like, and it's a perfectly satisfying to do. This thing is awesome. I do wish they took batteries. I just wish there was some way to battery power them other than like a USB battery pack. Cause that kind of stinks that they have to be tethered to a cord cause they're so little and cute, but I like having them on my desk. I thought the Steam Deck was going to cure my lust for retro handhelds. It did not. So this is the Pow Kitty X55.
I saw that earlier. I saw like when you were showing the audio thing on the floor 2 hours ago.
Oh, no.
I caught that too.
I was like, what is that thing on his desk?
Yeah. So it's about the size of a Switch Lite and has a screen the exact same resolution and dimensions as a Switch Lite. But it's got the same chipset as one of my other favorite handhelds, the Pow Kitty RGB30. That's the one with the perfectly square 720 screen, 720 by 720, perfect square. Fabulous for Game Boy Color, plays Pico 8 games natively, also great for NES and Super NES and a lot of Sega Genesis games that have a more squarish 8x7 aspect ratio. But like when you get to Game Boy Advance, and especially if you try to play something widescreen like PSP or the many PC ports available for this OS, for this Linux-based OS, that sort of stuff gets really squished. So I've always wanted a widescreen retro emulation handheld, and this one's great. I like it a lot. I am going to have to open it up and put a little Kapton tape underneath the D-pad diagonals because they're a little too sensitive, but that's a relatively easy fix. I had to do that with my RGB30 as well. And it runs everything right up to about Dreamcast. Dreamcast can be a little hit and miss. But you know, like Soul Calibur runs perfectly and you can do widescreen hacks with that. And a lot of PSP games work really well too. You know, I'm playing Burnout, on this widescreen and it's great. But the thing that I've been doing most on it is the PC ports that it can run because PC games are all 16x9 these days. Mm. And so they looked really tiny on a square or 4x3 screen. And so this OS has had about more than 1,000 PC games ported to it that can now run natively on it. And so that includes newish releases like UFO 50, Victory Heat Rally. Yeah. Every modern Metroidvania you can think of. So Axiom Verge, Chasm, Iconoclasts, AM2R,
Prince of Persia, the Two Crowns.
It's Prince of, okay, well, not that one. Every sprite-based, every sprite-based modern Metroidvania.
I knew what you meant.
games like Minute, or all the sprite-based action throwbacks like Panzer Paladin and Shovel Knight, and Tim, what is it fucking called? The one you just said.
Gravity Circuit.
Gravity Circuit. Yes, Gravity Circuit is available. Yes. Sonic Mania, Steel Assault. They're all playable on one of these little $70-ish devices. This one, in fact, was closer to 100 for a long time. Right now on AliExpress, it's like $63 with free shipping. Which for a console like this, which not only has access to a huge swath of retro emulation, but also all these modern PC games that you can just play on a really nice 720 panel, plus Pico 8, the endless indie development of Pico 8 games available for free. I just think these are a really great value. And I'm still addicted to my Steam Deck because that's the one where, you know, it can literally do anything. You know, that's if I want to... I went down a bit of a rabbit hole on my Steam Deck recently getting, like, delisted PS3 games. Stuff that is just not commercially available, like the Simpsons arcade game port, which is more convenient than playing the arcade ROM because you can select the characters on a single player slot. You know, stuff like that. And all of the Farsight Studios Pinball Arcade tables, which are now delisted because they lost the license, and Zen Pinball makes those now. But for everything else, having a little Switch Lite sized retro emulation handheld like this, this is fucking awesome. And speaking of pinball, the one newish release game that I've been playing, and Tim, this is what you mentioned last time, I believe.
You are literally an infinity meme of the guy looking away from his girlfriend at a new girlfriend, except it's little retro portables.
It's little, yeah.
No, but you just keep pulling back, and it's like...
Yeah, more and more.
Yeah, Dave's got the one. Oh, he's looking at that other one. Then you pull back. Dave's with that one. Oh, he found another one.
They just keep making more of them, and they keep getting better. Like, I will also say, it's a POW Kitty and not an Anbernic, so it's a little, like, the buttons are a little loose if you shake it. It's like... It doesn't have a Nintendo quality build quality like the Anbernic devices typically do. Like the Anbernic SP, which is the Game Boy Advance SP style one that flips up, that one feels fucking sturdy. That feels rock solid like an official Nintendo product. That's something that Nintendo could not better if they were to make a Game Boy Mini, if Nintendo were to make like a mini console for Game Boys, like... They couldn't do it better than Anbernic. Anbernic perfected it. This is cheaper to get to the price point it is, but it's great. It's fun as hell. I have no complaints. But the modern game I've been playing is Xenotilt. And Tim, it's mostly because you mentioned Xenotilt last time, I believe. So I was like, all right, You said the word. I've had it sitting around. I'll finally boot it up. My God. Oh my God. It's got me hooked to the exclusion of all else. I don't want to play anything but Xenotilt. Xenotilt is to and I loved Demon's Tilt. Demon's Tilt was fucking so good. It was like the thing that I used my Switch flip grip for. The only time I would bust out the flip grip was to play Demon's Tilt. And so Xenotilt is to Demon's Tilt what Devil's Crash was to Devil's Crush was to Aerosmith.
The theming,
While the theming is reversed, the level of advancement from one game to the next is the same. And I thought Demon's Tilt was a very complex game of pinball. I was not prepared. Xenotilt just takes everything that Demon's Tilt does and amplifies it up to just double the chaos, but it all works. Like, you get
in this... Is this PC only at this point?
I think it might be...
Okay.
Yeah.
Just curious.
As far as I know, Tim, you don't...
I mean, it was in early access for quite a long time. True. And kind of fairly recently came out on PC, so might be a thing where like it is coming.
But
it's available.
I do hope that it comes to the successor to the Nintendo Switch. Demon's Tilt did have to be cut down a bit for Switch. Like, they really pulled back on the graphical effects on Switch. It's still perfectly functional and playable. It's just not quite as pretty. But it's also, you know, they are chaotic games of pinball, and it's so good. I keep discovering new things. I'm playing the other mode now where there are like bonus tables in the style of Devil's Crush, which Demon's Tilt did not have. You know, little single one-off tables, little bonus tables, which are all just super creatively designed. And it makes me... So playing Xeno Tilt got me sort of back on a pinball kick, as I get on every few years, wanting to go back and play through the whole history of video pinball. And it made me think really hard about, like, what would be included in the canon? What is the Criterion Collection of video game pinball games? What are the essential ones, the must plays in the history of that particular genre? And if I was going to like pick five, I think there are three that are absolute locks in terms of the history. I think it's Alien Crush. I think it's Devil's Crush. And I think Kirby's Pinball.
I'd pick one or the other, but okay.
No, and I think they're both essential.
All right.
In a top list, though, that's hard. Like, I'm not saying don't do it, but...
I know.
Listen,
I personally believe that my personal favorite is Devil's
Crush.
I mean...
I would just, you lose one of the crushes and Metroid Prime Pinball should be on there.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, that's exactly
so
what
that's
I was
my fourth.
Too.
Metroid Prime. I feel Metroid Prime Pinball is a lock. I don't know if the community at large agrees with that.
The community can
say, this is your list.
That's my favorite. Yeah, this is our list. Yeah.
Well, if it's canon, if it's Criterion Collection, I could lose Alien Crush. Yeah. I could just have Devil's Crush on there.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't think everyone would agree with that. There is a contingent that prefers the simplicity of Alien Crush.
That's fine. I mean, they're maniacs. You put it there, it's like it's one or the other. It's your favorite, I guess. Yeah. You know.
Okay.
I mean, if you're doing Criterion, you're gonna have an Alien Devil like double pack, you know, and you put it in that slot, right?
Yeah.
Right.
What about Jockey Crush?
Jockey Crush.
Jockey who? I don't know her.
Nobody cares about Jockey Crush, apparently.
Is that a cereal? I don't know that
one. That's the third one.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the third compile.
I have a Super Famicom cartridge of it.
Oh, you have a cartridge of it?
Yep. Yeah, I bought it at MAGFest like a few years back. Yeah.
Yes, I knew that.
Pretty sure I still have that too.
I am so tempted to want to put Xeno Tilt, maybe Demon's Tilt too. Also, like, I kind of feel strongly that if I had to pick one or the other, it's Xeno Tilt. But like,
I'm trying to think, because the only other video pinball game I played, I mean, I played a lot of Pokemon Pinball, the first one,
which I also love. I prefer the Game Boy Advance version.
It's a great game,
but I think Ruby Sapphire is probably better, but I owned the first one. That was like something I played a ton on the Game Boy Color.
Pokemon Pinball on Game Boy Color was the final HAL developed pinball game, and HAL has a long history of pinball games.
Those Pokemon Pinball games are quite good.
I read fairly recently that Pokemon Pinball in fact used this, like, they carried over the same pinball physics code base that Iwata himself coded for NES pinball. Like, they carried that code base over from pinball game to pinball game, and its final appearance was Pokemon Pinball. That might be apocryphal. I don't know.
Possible.
Yeah, I would love to see... Yeah, I think Pokemon Pinball could be in the canon, like... And there's a lot of other video pinball games that I like a lot, but I know are not what, like, I think Pro Pinball Time Shock is an all-time great, but it's also, I guess, kind of more niche, more lesser known. That was the...
Sorry, which one was that?
Pro Pinball Time Shock is probably the most popular pinball game that was made by the team that went on to become Fuse Games, makers of Metroid Prime Pinball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. It was like a 1995-ish DOS game that got PlayStation port, a Dreamcast port eventually. I think that's one of the greatest video pinball games ever made. And I'm not counting pinball simulators like Williams Pinball.
That's a different thing.
Yeah, that's a different thing. We know what we're talking about when we say video pinball games.
Video game pinball.
Yeah.
Not.
Yeah. But I think like Devil's Crush is a lock. Kirby's Pinball is a lock. Metroid Prime Pinball is a lock. I think there's got to be room for Xenotilt. It's that good.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that.
I know it's new and fresh, but I think it deserves a place in this
I would
list
think that, and I would think Pokemon Pinball. Those are the ones that come to mind for me.
Yeah.
I mean, the four around Xeno are, like, easily the best I've played. So, yeah, it sells Xeno right there.
Revenge of the Gator.
Putting it in that company. Revenge of the Gator.
Revenge of the Gator.
What about Little Mermaid 2 Pinball Frenzy? I bought a copy of Little Mermaid Pinball Frenzy because I found it like randomly at some flea market.
Oh, I totally would have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but also I know,
how
like,
could you not?
If you are a Brit or if you're from the continent, then Pinball Dreams has to be on that list too. Like, I don't think many Americans would consider it essential, but I think for most Brits and Europeans, it's like, fuck you, mate. Video Pinball is Pinball Dreams, Fantasies, that whole series.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Well,
I like the one Haunted House Table in that first one, but other than that, yeah. And that's it.
My brain is just doing the math between, because I've just always liked Breakout Arkanoid games and just like the different, because like, obviously, I like Wizard more than you do, but that game is also more Breakout than it is Pinball.
Oh,
I
think, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And stuff like that.
That's all I've been playing, other than a little bit of Balatro, which is also ported to these devices. So
I've still been playing Balatro. There is
You got Spilled Mushrooms, the Balatro of Playdate. I don't think it's going to hit that level, but
there is a pinball game coming soon for Playdate called Devils on the Moon Pinball.
Ooh.
Oh, I have that on my wish list already. That looks
pretty good. I will definitely be checking that out. I was like, yeah, there has to be a pinball game for Playdate. Surely somebody.
Yeah, that cross. Yeah, I saw that.
I'm
surprised there aren't more games right now.
Well, you know, it's just I think the scene is still taking off.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I guess that's about it for this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. I feel like we've gone through everything. We got a review.
Yeah. Oh, Tim, I read that Box Brown book, The He-Man Effect.
Okay. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. That was excellent.
Yeah.
Isn't that so good?
Yeah. Just a really like. You know, and I love his afterword where he acknowledges, like, look, I know that this is an indictment of the commercialism of this stuff, but I love it too. You know, I'm coming from this from the same perspective you, the reader, are. I am a fan. Like, this stuff is in my brain. That's why I'm writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I really like the ending, the conclusion / aftermath. Like, those last few pages were very satisfying.
Yeah.
Just where that was headed.
I don't remember. Did I mention last time that I had read the very first, I finally purchased a compilation of the first run of Eastman and Laird Ninja Turtles comics from 1984?
Oh, no, I don't think you mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. I had never read them before. And so I went out and bought I went to my local comic book shop, bought the hardcover edition of a very expensive volume to support the shop, instead of buying it for $17 in paperback on Amazon. And it was really awesome because it's punk as fuck, you know?
You
really get the sense that, like, they are writing the unapologetically writing the thing, a thing that they think is cool. Which is just so, you know, wonderful and pure. And it's a little rough and a little uneven, but like there's this unbridled enthusiasm underneath all of it that just carries it. And you totally get why people would fall in love with this absolute batshit nonsense.
Yeah. I have issue number 4.
Oh, wow.
It unfortunately it has, I got it at like a thrift shop. It unfortunately has like a hole through like a third of the issue. But it's still cool to have, and it's remarkable because it has the panel that the art for the NES game is based off of, is in that issue. You must have seen that, Dave, if you were reading through it, like
issue number
that scene.
Well, it's annotated issue number 4 too. So I'll crack it open and take a look, because they neither Eastman nor Laird mentioned that little bit of trivia, but I'm sure I'll.
Well, maybe I'm misremembering it. I should have cracked open the book and double checked, but I'm pretty sure.
All right, no, I'll
I remember being like, "Oh, this is crazy." Yeah, because I have my poster.
Yeah.
Of that cover art that's signed by Kevin Eastman.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, I remember that.
Yep.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing our, you know, low budget pictures director friend, he took it to a convention with him and got it signed by Kevin Eastman. Okay. And then my mom got it nicely laminated and like mounted on this, like, it looks awesome.
That's so nice.
I mean, yeah. I mean, she it is really nice. She didn't realize it was going to be like $100 when she did it. But like, yeah, it looks great and it's held up great. Like, I'd probably find a place for it. So
because it's a big poster that was a big fold out, like it's what?
Yeah.
Two feet by 30 inches or so.
Yeah. That wasn't like one of the, like the vertical ones that you usually see from Nintendo Power. It was like a much more sizable one. It's a big deal, that Turtles game, but, it's
fucking rad.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a cool thing to have. Yeah. I've also, wanted to mention, while we're talking about things that we read, I probably mentioned the Image Comics Transformers books.
Yes.
Their little Hasbro universe stuff they've been doing. They've got some like G.I. Joe books too. I don't read those because I'm not as much into G.I. Joe. They have an ongoing Transformers series that is, it's decent. I think I like the art to it. I don't love the writing quite as much. I mean, the most recent issue had Devastator giving Bruticus a diamond cutter off of a building. So,
all right,
it definitely has moments. But the sister book, which is the one that's actually written by Robert Kirkman.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. He, you know, Robert Kirkman of Walking Dead fame, of Invincible fame.
I was going to say right now, Invincible kind fame. Of in the zeitgeist more.
Yeah. Which I still got to watch that show, but I've read the book. So, you know, I know what happens and I know the show rules. So I believe it.
Show rules. I'm a season plus behind. I might be 2 seasons behind at this one.
Season 3 just wrapped up. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I last saw the spinoff, the Atomic, whatever her name is.
Okay.
Like they did that special a couple years ago.
Gotcha. Yeah, he has the book that he's writing is called Void Rivals, which is Transformers. It is in the universe. It is not like focused on Cybertronians, but they are in the book. They show up. It is about something different. Like I the most recent issue was kind of like very revelatory as to like where the story of this is headed.
Okay.
It's good. That is, you know, look up volumes of that at your local library. See if they have Void Rivals. I am wholeheartedly recommending that book, because one of the great things about Robert Kirkman is he doesn't start writing a story unless he knows where it's going to end, which is a very appreciated in the world of comic books, where things tend to stretch on forever. So I have confidence that it's like, okay, he knows where he's going. He's, you know, the way he strings things together out across multiple issues is very, very good. Like Invincible really is like better than The Walking Dead in that sense. It is incredible. Like the web he weaves in that book. But yeah, I'm really liking Void Rivals. They're like 17, 18 issues deep at this point, so it's not too far. It's not too daunting, I guess, to get into. But yeah, I'm sure he'll be putting out like 48 issue compendiums by the time he's done with it. Who knows how long he's going to go on it? I don't know. He also doesn't like to tell people when things are going to end, because like the day I went to the comic shop and found out that I had just purchased the last issue of The Walking Dead and didn't know until I got to the end of the book that it was the last issue. Yep. Yeah.
I didn't know it ended. So yeah. That's good. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. No, 4 compendiums. There was an end to the comics. Yep. It was just short of like issue 200. I think it was like 196 or something like that is where it ended. Something like that. 190 something. Yeah,
Void Rivals added to my 4 later right now.
Yeah, check out that. I read something. Was that another one of his that I read? Oh, God, what was it called? It was one of his, but it was a bit shorter. Crap, what the hell was it called? It's probably bad. I don't remember what it was, but I read it very quickly because it was good. I don't know.
Can you blow through it? I haven't gotten to comics in a bit, so it's nice to have a rec.
Yeah, I don't read as much. Like Oblivion Song, that was the other thing that I read of his that was pretty good. That's only 4 volumes. Or wait, no, sorry, it's 6, but it's not too long. It was 36 issues total, so like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one. Yeah, I'm trying to think what else has been good in comics. I don't know. The most recent Spider-Man arc I've really been enjoying. But
good.
Yeah. You know, that's just something I'm stuck with at this point. Spider-Man.
Yeah. Better or worse, I suppose.
Yeah, but most of the other stuff, it's like they did another relaunch of X-Men, and I got like 6 issues deep, and they're like, oh, to be continued in the other X-Men book. And I'm like, God fucking damn it. Can't you have, like, I don't want to go buy the other one.
You
I just want to read
fuckers.
Yeah, like, please, yeah. Just like help, like control yourselves for not even a year to let me just read a continuous X-Men storyline. Jesus fucking Christ, Marvel. So, yeah. yeah, but that's going to be it. That will actually be
okay.
It. Yeah. Yeah, I'm reading another book, but I'll hopefully have it finished by the next episode, and then I'll talk about it.
All right.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, thanks, everybody.
Yep. We will have another episode by the end of March. I think we can promise that. I think we can assure you.
Yeah, I think we got that one.
Or the end of April. That month, the next one. Yeah.
That's it.
So, yeah, thanks for listening. We'll catch y'all later.
All right.
Good.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.